This is class number 7, Kartik 2009, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We're concluding this chapter slowly on sadhana bhakti. Rupa Goswami has been enunciating all the various limbs or practices, bhakti anga of devotional service. And then he talks about a very interesting concept which is often misunderstood in these two verses. First division, chapter 2, verse 255 and 256. And this is what we call dovetailing, very early on in Krishna consciousness, engaging everything in Krishna's service. And sometimes people take that too far. Rather than engaging objects and other people in Krishna's service, the devotee himself becomes engaged in the service of the object and the service of the other person. In other words, he goes into Maya. So this is this idea of engaging everything in Krishna's service. It's a dual-edged sword that we have to be careful that we don't cut ourselves while we're cutting something else. So the verse is well known to the devotees that have been around for a while. 255, anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjata nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagya yuchate. It's a very curious concept of devotional service, where in bhakti this is kind of the synthesis of tyag and bhog. They seem to be incompatible. Bhog is enjoyment, and generally when one is engrossed or absorbed in material enjoyment, there is not much room for God there. It's body-centered. Me, my wife, my children, whatever. The world, the objects, the pleasures, so-called physical pleasures. But in this concept, the Rupa Goswami, he's saying that with this touch of consciousness, when transcendental consciousness touches these two activities, bhog and tyag, which means enjoyment and detachment, or enjoyment and renunciation, when there's a touch of transcendental consciousness, then the whole thing becomes spiritualized. It's called yukta vairagya. So there is detachment in attachment and service in enjoyment. It looks like it's enjoyment, but it's actually service. And it looks like attachment, but it's actually detachment. Krishna hints at the same concept in Bhagavad Gita. And he says that one who sees action and inaction, and inaction and action, he's a true knower of things. So this is a very paradoxical statement. One who sees action and inaction, and action and inaction, he is a true knower of things. Now this verse is talking about this. Because you have anasaktasya. Asakti means attachment. So he says anasaktasya vishyan. The translation is given here. When non-attached persons make moderate acceptances of worldly objects and employ them in the services of Lord Krishna, it is called yukta vairagya, balanced detachment. It starts with consciousness. Consciousness means awareness, understanding, the realization and the perception that where's my center point? Where am I starting from? I'm starting from ground zero, my id, my ego, my identity, and everything else is around me and 360 degrees. The center point is me, the Atma, the Jiva, the subjective person, the observer, the experiencer. So I see that I'm surrounded by so many objects, and these objects and this world itself were here before I came into this world and this particular body, and they will remain after I leave. So therefore, these objects are not created by me, they're already existing prior to my being here. And they'll continue to exist after I leave. So there must be some person who's creating all the objects and the world, the very world itself. And someone who creates something or makes something, he can generally be allowed to claim proprietorship. I made this house. I built this house. So someone will say, well, whose house is it? It's mine. I built it. I collected the objects. But then if someone's a philosopher, our friend might say, well, where did you get the objects? You used bricks and water and steel and so many plastics and things to make the house, but who provided you those? Oh, I purchased them with my money. With my hard-earned money, I purchased these objects and built the elements and built the house. Well, who made the elements? Who made the bricks? Well, the brickmaker. What are they made out of? They're made of clay. And they're made of water and fire. Well, who made the clay? Well, God. Who made the water? Well, God. Who made the fire? God. So when you trace back, the source of everything is ultimately God. He is the creator of everything, and he's actually the proprietor and owner of everything. So this is the consciousness is described throughout Upanishads and throughout Gita, which is Gita Upanishad and Puran. Ishavasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jagatyam jagat tena tyak tena bunjita madgriha kasya swidhanam. That everything animate and inanimate, living or non-living, sentient or insentient, within the world of perception is actually owned and controlled by God. It belongs to him. I have some things on lease. I may lease a car from a leasing agency, and I enjoy it. I drive it. I pay my yearly lease, but I can't sell the car. I can't sell it, and if I crash it, I have to repair it at my expense. And I can't. If I go to sell it, someone will say, "Where's the title of ownership?" I say, "Well, I don't have one." Then how can you sell it? Well, I can't because it's leased by the bank or whatever. So whatever objects we have in our hand, it's a leasing contract. This body itself is on lease. It's on lease from God. He owns the title. The title of this body, the title of this world is owned by God. He's a title owner. Devotee recognizes this, that actually everything belongs to Krishna. So I can't claim anything. I can't claim proprietorship, but I can engage being Krishna's servant or a loyal servant of the master. I can use these objects of this world and engage them in the service of the master. Like I may be a chokidar, and I'm guarding someone's house, and somehow I see that the children are playing the set, and they go in the house, and they take out some silver plates and cups of the master, and they're playing house somewhere in the corner of the yard, and then they go in the house for dinner and forget about it. I say, "Oh, look at this silver plate on this silver cup that the children discarded in the yard inadvertently, they forgot about." So I can say, "Oh, this is very nice. I can augment my income. I can put this plate and saucer and tally in my pocket, and after work I'll sell it, make a little money." And when the master says, "Did you see a silver plate?" I didn't see. Or I can say, "Oh, this belongs to the master. Collect this cup and plate and go to the master and say, 'Oh, dear sir, your children took these out from your kitchen or dining room and they forgot to return them. Here, this is your plate and cup.'" And he'll say, "Oh yes, this is quite appropriate. These are mine, and I'm glad you recognized that and gave it back to me." And appreciating your honesty and appreciating the achara, the behavior that you're exhibiting, that non-attached spirit, that non-greedy spirit, and that cognizance that they are not your objects, they belong to your master. Your master may even reward you. Say, "I appreciate your honesty. Keep one plate for yourself. Keep one, or here's 100 rupees more," or whatever. This is the devotional conception, is that the devotee recognizes, yes, everything belongs to Krishna, and all the objects should be offered to him. And then when we engage that way, then he says, "Oh, but maybe you need something." "Ah, all right, I need the basics, maintenance, whatever I may require." So then God gives us what we require, the minimum. Prabhupada used the analogy, if someone goes into the Citibank or State Bank of India, and he walks in and he asks the manager, he says, "What are the assets of this bank? How much money is in this bank, this branch or whatever?" Oh, he says, "We have 5 crores. So then he stands up and he says, "Listen, everyone, attention, everyone, listen. I renounce all the money in this bank. I renounce everything." And everybody will say, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm Mr. Nobody." And they say, "What? You don't own any, you don't control or own any of the assets of this bank. And you're saying, 'I renounce everything. I renounce this bank.'" So people will laugh at you. You don't have anything to renounce. You don't own anything of this bank. You're simply walked off the street. So someone might say, "I'm going to Rishikesh. I'm going to Haridwar. I'm leaving Delhi. I'm going to renounce this world. I'm leaving my family. I'm going to renounce." But then we say, "What do you mean? You don't own it to start with. What are you renouncing? This is God's world. This is God's family. This is God's wife. This is God's children. This is God's house. I renounce. I'm going to Hardwar. So the devotees, they don't. We say this is false renunciation. This is Falgu, Falgu Vairagya. You can't renounce something you don't own. How can you renounce something you don't possess? I renounce your car. Oh, you're very detached. But it's my car. How can you? But you have your clothes and you give them away. So the devotee says, I renounce this world. But what is our definition of renunciation? This is real renunciation. Like the Yudhisthira and the Pandavas, when they're living here in Meerut or whatever, somewhere in that area, around Delhi side, Meerut and all that. They had a fantastic palace and they had so much gold. They were eating on gold plates. It's described in the Mahabharata. They would eat on a gold plate and afterwards they would throw it in a pile. And then the musicians and panegyrists and poets and entertainers, they would collect that as their payment. Can you imagine throwing away a gold plate? And they would get another one. And there's so many servants and cooks and all opulence and gold. They were the kings, emperors of the world. And Krishna was living with them as their friend. Bhagavan was associating with them. But their mentality, their consciousness was, all right, we're Krishna's devotees. We're Shuddha Bhaktas, we're pure devotees. We're having all these things just to establish in the minds of the people of India and other colonies or countries of the world that Krishna's, that everything belongs to God, and Krishna's devotees can also live very lavishly. They can live very opulently and lavishly with non-attachment. This is a very interesting idea. They're surrounded by all these luxurious items and so much service and so much grandeur and pomp, but it never affected their consciousness. They never wavered for a moment and thought, I am the enjoyer. They never thought that these are my objects, that these are meant for me, or I deserve these things, or I earned these things. They simply thought, all right, these are the trappings of the drama. When you perform a drama, then they may dress you up as a king and they put a gold helmet on you and you go out on the stage. And after the drama's over, you take off, you put on your t-shirt and your blue jeans, get on your motorcycle and drive home. But on the stage, you're decked out as a king and it's all for the role that you're playing as a king, or maybe you're playing Ram in Ramayana performance. They felt like that. Their consciousness is always fixed on Krishna. I'm acting like this and accepting all this worship and puja and grandeur and luxury as service to God, to Krishna. He's living with us. And the proof of that is that as soon as Krishna left this planet, he returned to Dwarka and left this planet, and the Pandavas and Draupadi and Kunti, they got the news that Krishna left the planet, they immediately dropped everything. They dropped everything. They didn't ship all their wealth to the Swiss bank first. They didn't open an account in the Swiss bank and ship out as many thousands and thousands of crores, you know, Bofors and Bocrores and Bofors, and as much money they can, you know, rip off of India, or like one guy is going to be overthrown as a president of Colombia, so he sends all his money to British Honduras, about $50 million, and he buys a house over there. Then when they come for the revolution, he scoots out next door to British Honduras, and he has his $50 million, which he transfers to Swiss Bank, and then he buys a chalet in Zurich and lives happily ever after, surrounded with his wealth. The Pandavas left everything. The Draupadi and Kunti, they didn't even take a bangle. They said, whatever we had it for the service of Krishna, for the glorification of God. And our God has left this world. Bhagavan has left this world. So they dropped everything, even bangles, earrings, toe rings, everything. They didn't have like a stash of, platinum cards in their money belt or debit cards. They had nothing. They just had some cloth on their back and they went off with a kamandalu, with a water pot, and they started walking to the Himalayas. They said, the whole purpose of our existence, the purpose of us holding this power and position and this wealth is only for the service of Krishna, the glorification. See, we are devoted, we are pure devotees of the Lord. We are existing only for the pleasure. We are running this kingdom for the pleasure of Krishna. We are maintaining our power and leading the people in a religious way. But now the Lord has left, and there's no function for us anymore. There's no service. We must go with our Lord. So then they left. But we, on the other hand, we could never imagine being surrounded by so much opulence and leaving even any of it. or a second, because we become very attached. So this verse is these words, anasakti vishayan, sense gratification with no attachment. As nirbandha krishna sambandhe yukta vairagya yuchate. So this is really vairagya. Yukta means to connect everything. Detached means I don't own anything, everything belongs to God. But somehow it's disconnected with God due to consciousness. The consciousness of the materialistic people in this world, they've taken the objects of God and they separated them from God's service. Just like the children, and they're enjoying consciousness. They took the mother and father's plate and tali and they took it in the yard and they were enjoying it. And then they forgot about it. So the devotee's duty is to collect all the objects of God and bring them back to the original owner, to engage them in the rightful owner. And this is what bhakti means. Although the devotee himself may live in a very simple way, like Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj. Sometimes he would go and the disciples they'd serve him on a silver platter. Later on, big silver tray and so many silver bowls. Many, many preparations. And still he would take a little bitter melon, a little mung dal, two chapatis, a little rice, and a teaspoon of sweet rice, and a small piece of sandesh and bas, finished. And all these elaborate preparations that disciples would make to honor him and to show their respect or love. And sometimes Prabhupada would call, and who is cooking this lunch? So this servant would come, and this lady would come, and the different disciples would come. And one day he said, are you cooking this for me, or are you cooking this for you? With all these cakes and puddings and this and that, I'm only eating toro sab. And they were hung their heads down and said, well, Prabhupada, you're our guru, we want to please you, give you the best things we can imagine. And we don't know what, you may look at something and may like it, and if you like it, that's our perfection, this and that. Prabhupada was surrounded by so much worship and so much puja and so much wealth and so many bank accounts and moving money here and there, publishing this book, opening this temple, holding this festival. But the same, he always had his two dhotis and two kurtas and a simple, he had one little plastic bag, and it wasn't even vinyl, it was like really cheap. When you buy these cheap plastic little bags, it's like brittle type of plastic. You know, cheap plastic is kind of brittle and kind of cracks and it's not very much nice. You know, there's good plastic and cheap plastic. Everything has good, better, and best. So he had a little white bag like that, and he had the keys for all his Elmiras. In different parts of the world, he had Elmiras with legal papers and different things he would keep there in different temples. And this little plastic bag he had for 11 years. And it was all cracked. He would get on the airplane, all his keys there. And so many disciples, they buy a new bag. He said, Prabhupada, can we have your old bag? You take a new one. He said, oh, there's no need, you know. So it's a very, wasn't much into taking anything for himself. This interesting purport. This concept of engaging everything in Krishna's service, this can only be done successfully, as I started the class, depending on the level of consciousness of the engager or the level of consciousness of the devotee who is attempting to do that. Because this world is mighty and it's powerful, and the predominating goddess of this world is depicted as a goddess, Kali Bhairav or Durga. Durgamagati. Durgamagati means that it's very difficult to move. Durgama. Very difficult to move or attain any destination in this world. Gati means destination, or culmination, or completion, or fulfillment. Dur means difficult. You want to establish a business, it's not easy. Say you want to start a business in security. After you retire from the army, you want to start a security business. It's not easy. You have to work hard and be friendly and make contacts and get the right product and serve the people and so many things. So it's difficult. And so Durga, she controls the material world and makes it very difficult to leave, very difficult to get out. When a devotee endeavors to try to engage this world in the service of Krishna, then he best be extremely detached himself and very pure. Or because the world itself is full of attachment and the world itself is full of impurity. That's why the shloka is there, Om apavitra pavitra va sarvavastam gatopiva yak smarit Pundarikaksham Sabha Yabhyantara Shuchi Sri Vishnu Sri Vishnu Sri Vishnu. This is an Achman mantra. It's called Bhuta Shuddhi. And Bhuta means elements. Elements, like we have earth, water, fire. Elements, and Shuddhi or Shud means to purify. And the meaning of this mantra is that whether one Sarvavastam Katopiva, the same word as there, Katop, the goal, whether one is inside or outside or moving here or there, wherever he is, if he remembers Pundarikaksham, Om Apavitra, Pavitra Va, Sarvavastam Katopiva, if he remembers Pundarikaksha, Sri Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, with the beautiful lotus petal eyes, then whether he's pure or impure, he will become pure. His consciousness will become pure, his environment will become pure, his motivation will become pure, and all his activities will become pure. Pure means transcendental. Pure means connected to God. Pure means free from selfishness, free from independence. This is the meaning of purity. Therefore, unless one is very pure and very spiritually advanced, when he's contacting the contaminated objects and consciousness of the people of the world, he can himself become contaminated or impure. It's not easy. Because many new devotees, as I mentioned, they pick up this concept, yukta vairagya, engage everything in Krishna's service. So one devotee, he says, "Oh, Prabhu, I need a car for Sankirtan. I'm going out on book distribution. I'm traveling all around the city carrying so many hundreds of books. I need to have a car to travel here and there." So then the temple president says, "So maybe you can ask some life member, they can give donation for a car, a nice car, a simple car." So then he meets with the life member and said, "Oh, our temple is very poor, but we need one car. Can you donate a car, a new car for Sankirtan?" The life member said, "Yes, what kind of car would you like?" "Oh," he said, we want to get an 8.35 BMW for Sankirtan or book distribution, because we don't have much time. We only have a few hours. We have to get out fast from the temple and come back for Mahaprasad, so we don't want to be late." And then the life member might say, "Well, are you sure you need an 8.35 or BMW? Do you think maybe a Ruti van would serve the same purpose?" I mean, the front seat of that car, we can buy one Maruti van for the same price as the front seat of that car. And this is a gross misapplication of this lofty principle of engaging everything in Krishna's service. So this, we have to be careful with this principle. It's better that we inquire from seniors and more advanced devotees. Am I doing the right thing here? Because this principle comes in the Sadhana Bhakti chapter. But we have to be very careful about using it. Yukta vihar, ahar, food. Commenting on this verse, Jiva Goswami explains the purpose of the author. Because it's interesting, because the whole discussion, I guess we have to see everything in context, especially if you drop in or just a random class. Because the whole gist, everything's contextual, especially in a textbook. This is a textbook of bhakti, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So to isolate one verse and try to get the full picture, it's impossible. So the previous verses and the subsequent verses and the whole gist of the discussion has to be considered, and those that are here every day can understand. We're talking about bhakti, service of Krishna, pure devotional service. And then there's some discussions about, well, where does vairagya come in? And where does gyan? Because there's lots of gyanis in the world, logicians, and Naya, people studying logic and Tarka and Naya. And there's lots of yogis and Vairagi sadhus. Now, where does that come into play in terms of bhakti, jnana and vairagya? Is bhakti concerned with that? So this discussion, he's been talking about that, how bhakti is transcendental, and bhakti means just to act and please Krishna, ultimately. Krishna anukulya. Act favorably for Krishna's happiness and pleasure, and that promotes our spiritual cause, gives us enlightenment of God, and ultimately mukti or moksha. That's all we have to do, is do bhakti. We don't have to worry about severe renunciation, fasting, and penances. We don't have to worry so much about learning Sanskrit and poring over all the aphorisms and sutras of the Vedas, Vedanta Sutra, Tat Tamasi, and Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, Soham, Aham Brahmasmi, Om Tat Sat. There's so many sutras in Veda that you can study on the path of Gyan. So that's discussion. Now he's saying, now in this verse, he's taking, as I said, he's taking the Gyan and the Vairagya, and he's blending together in this concept of Anasaktasya Vishayan. Yatarham upayunjata nirbanda krishna sambandha yukta vairagyam yuchate. He's saying that the devotee sees krishna sambandha, nirbanda. Nirbanda, banda, banda means relationship. None of the objects or people of this world have any real, lasting, or permanent relationship with me as an atma. But krishna sambandha, everything has a relationship with God. And that's what spiritual life means. Religion, really, the briefest definition of religion is proper adjustment. Religion means proper adjustment of the environment in relation to God. This is religion. How to adjust everything, proper adjustment. So I see that everything has a relationship with God, and I become free from this entire material world, not by not touching anything, or not touching money, or not seeing anything of the world, staring at the tip of my nose, living in a cave in the Himalayas, eating a little, some dry flour mixed with some Ganga Jal, and doing pranayama. My moksha, my mukti, vairagya muchite, my liberation stands when I learn yukta or yoga. When I become detached, when I learn to engage everything in relationship to Krishna, and engage everything in His service, this is bhakti. Like sometimes you go to some gyanis or yogis, and you say, Maharaji, or Guruji, or Swamiji, I want to give some dan, some bhakshish, for your ashram, or for your goseva. No, I don't touch money. I don't touch money. I am niskinchan. I'm a kinshin sadhu, niskinshin. I don't touch money. You keep your money. Because he's thinking, money is maya, or money has so much karma fall there, and maybe it's black money and ill-begotten money through black marketing or selling leather or some wrong thing. So it's some contamination is there in this money and the background of this money, the karmic links of this money, which I will have to absorb and accept by receiving a donation. So I don't touch money. I don't touch any money. However, if someone goes to a devotee, he says, I have 1 lakh to give for Krishna's service. He says, that's nice. Thank you very much. Only one? Do you have 10 more? and then the person says, but I went to this yogi in Hardwar. He said he wouldn't touch money. Okay. He doesn't know how to touch it. He's afraid he'll get burned. He's afraid that money will burn him. But I'm going to touch it, but not touch it. This is called yukta vairagya. I'm going to connect it. I'm going to take from your hand and put it in Krishna's hand. I'm the postman on the via medium between your ill-begotten money or whatever, and it won't contaminate me because I'm just the passageway. I receive it from you and I give it to God. Build the temple, distribute prasadam. I'm simply the conduit. I'm the passive conduit. The electric wire, the copper wire, is not electricity. He's the conduit. He's the via medium between the powerhouse and your air conditioner. He's simply the passive conductor, the electric wire. So we're the conductor to connect everyone and everything with Krishna. This is the role of the devotee. Then he says, before he wants to summarize, Rupa Goswami in this ancient book of devotion wants to summarize his concepts and harmonize them and bring a clear understanding to the devotee's mind. Because this is a handbook for devotees and a guidebook for devotion. So we have a clear concept of Gyan and Vairagya and the role that they play and how to incorporate these concepts or these practices or viewpoints in the execution of bhakti or devotional service. What has previously been explicitly stated as vairagya or detachment, which enables one in following the path of bhakti, is explicitly defined here. When a devotee who is unattached to worldly objects enjoys them with detachment to the extent of his eager employment of such enjoyments of worldly objects in the service of Krishna, it is called yukta vairagya or balanced detachment. That is to say, there need not be wholesale or total rejection of everything of this world, which may be useful for the service of the Lord. Nor need there be any desire for earthly objects for one's own sense enjoyments. A true and balanced yukta, or devotee, accepts those objects of the world which are helpful to promote the cause of bhakti, and he rejects or lets go, or he's detached from such mundane objects which are unfavorable to the services of the Lord. So there's so many obvious things there, that something that's useful and valuable to engage in the service of the Lord, which is most everything, one way or the other, if you have the consciousness, the devotee will use, engage in the service of the Lord. But some things, like dead animals or whatever, so many things you can think of that aren't really useful for the service of the Lord, plastic, or these things aren't necessary, although they're all over the place. There's plastic here, everywhere, and we're surrounded by it. But ultimately, we don't need all these things. Mukunda Das Goswami points out, Rupa Goswami defines natural detachment as the normal nature of bhakti. Because bhakti is all about love, and love is all about attachment. Attachment and service. You serve the one you're attached to, and you're attached to one you serve. You're attached to the one you serve. The more you serve, the more you become attached. The more you love, the more you serve. The more you serve, they go work together. So bhakti means the love of God, to love Krishna. And the more one loves Krishna, the more he serves Krishna. And the more he serves Krishna, the more attached to Krishna he becomes. So two things can't exist simultaneously. You can't embrace two people at the same time. So when the devotee, because he strongly embraces Krishna, then he lets go of the embrace of Maya. That's automatic. As he becomes attached to Krishna and engaging in Krishna's service, then he stops serving Maya and he becomes detached. He gives up his attachment to Maya. Natural detachment is the normal nature of bhakti. When, according to one's eligibility and spiritual capability, this is very interesting, his eligibility, his adhikar, and his actual spiritual attainment, one accepts objects of enjoyments without being attached to them, at the same time shows eager interest in accepting objects which are associated with Krishna, such as mahaprasad, flower garland, sandalwood paste, which are offered to Krishna at the time of worship. This is called balanced detachment. In other words, we offer so many wonderful things to Krishna for his pleasure, and by chance he may offer us some mahaprasadam. Prabhupada said, in a temple we cook very opulent and wonderful objects or food for the Lord, fried things and sweet things and so many sweets, and we offer them to the Lord for Krishna's pleasure. And then that mahaprasadam, Prabhupada said, generally that mahaprasadam is distributed to the grihasthas or to the visitors, because they will get a nice experience of Krishna consciousness, very wonderful food. And the regular ashramites, brahmachari sannyasis, they eat simple rice dalas and that for maintenance, yoga diet, sattvic food. And it's all sattvic, it's all prasadam, but not opulent things. Heavy sweets and heavy ghee, they very light diet. But then occasionally someone says, oh, brahmachari, here's some mahaprasadam. So they don't say, I'm a vairagi. I don't take mahaprasadam. I'm sannyas. So we shouldn't renounce mahaprasadam. This is a special mercy of Krishna, grace and favor of the Lord. And it comes on its own accord. It's not that we beat down the door of the pujari room, hey, give me some mahaprasad. Out of greed and out of lust to satisfy our tongue, and we want lots of sweets, and we want lots of deep-fried pakoris, and we're happy in the service of the Lord. So it breeds automatic. When you're happy in the service of the Lord, detachment is automatic. It's not forced. It's automatic. It's like when you become healthy, then automatically, disease detaches itself from you. You're under the influence of disease and fever and pain, and then gradually eating, taking medicine, getting healthy. Then you embrace health and disease leaves you. And its subsequent symptoms of fever and pain, it just leaves you. And now I'm healthy now. I don't remember when I had a fever and backache and all sore muscles. A Krishna consciousness is a healthy state of consciousness, healthy state of mind. So when we're like that, we're not lusting after opulent, tasty foods. Okay, I got some mahaprasad. Okay, and even you take a little bit. Okay, fine, and you feel Krishna's presence, because Krishna's in a drop. Krishna's in the ocean. One drop is Krishna, the whole ocean is Krishna. Anoraniyan mahato mahiyan. Krishna is as small as the atom, he's big as the universe. So one minuscule portion of Mahaprasadam can make your hair stand on end and your body tremble in joy. Or you can have 10 cups of kheer. You can have 2 liters of kheer and I don't know what's going to stand on joy. You're going to stand upside down probably. From too much prasadam. There's some different verses quoted in this purport from Bhagavatam. How the devotees get this higher experience. And there's another verse that follows this. Prapanchataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mamukshabi purityago vairagyam falgu katyate. And that verse will start tomorrow.